So I had to break into the house and had to show her, like, basically that I knew how to get in and out of the house.
Yeah.
And then my cover was blown. God. But it was worth it to work on time, I think.
It's like an Ocean's 11 operation.
Hello, and welcome to Revel, a collection of Realm's comedies, dramedies, and rom-com oddities. My name's Nicole, and I'm here with my fellow Realm producer and co-host Rhoda to talk all about the show you're listening to, Elixir.
Be sure to stick around after the show for some behind-the-scenes discussion, where we talk about having a real conversation with your parents and sneaking out as teenagers.
We'll be right back just after this.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible.
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
The Von Diek estate, where the current acting head of the city council resided, enjoyed a world-famous view. Adrian gazed across his city, hands folded behind his back. He needed more time. The reformists weren't ready to show their hand. They didn't have the final pieces of the puzzle yet, but he didn't have a choice. He glared at Locke, but in his mind he saw Lou, the fear in her eyes. In that instant, he'd understood what she meant to do. Procure what they needed, no matter the cost. Now it was his turn to be bold.
Adrian!
Maxwell Von Diek finally tottered in, wearing silk pajamas.
Didn't your father teach you not to call at such uncivilized hours?
Adrian repressed an eye roll.
I am here to present evidence of treason committed by a standing member of the city council. That is a very serious accusation, young man.
Older people always called him young man when he unnerved them.
Who are you accusing?
He opened his jacket and took out the file. Johannes Thornley.
Realm presents Elixir. Episode 9.
The Thornley Manor wavered around Elsie. She had a flash of herself at 6 years old, running through this hallway, screaming with laughter as her father scooped her into his arms. Or had it been a servant? Perhaps it was the man gripping her elbow now, marching her upstairs. His name lingered on the tip of her tongue. Gurnor, or... It slipped away. There was another woman with her. Lou. Lou, her sister. And her name was Elsabet Thornley, daughter of Carlotta and Johannes. Criminals. Remember what they did to us. Focus, Elsie. She caught the vial around her neck, gripped it so tight it dug grooves into her palm. She needed to remember. To hang on to the truth.
Have a pleasant rest.
The servant, whose name she'd forgotten, shoved her into a room. It felt as if moths were eating her brain. The necklace. Who gave her the necklace? Someone important? Someone smart and funny and beautiful and... What was her name? Elsie. Hmm? Elsie, we shouldn't have drunk those elixirs. We don't know what... What Papa was... Lou. My sister. Right. She had to move quickly. Her hand was still wrapped around something... Something important. Vera. Vera had given her this necklace. The cure-all. She uncapped the vial. Elsie took a quick sip. She didn't stop to appreciate it. Just pressed the vial to Lou's lips. No! No elixirs! I don't take those! She tried to turn her head, but Elsie touched her cheek.
"All's Jake, Lou."
Finally, Lou opened her mouth. Elsie tipped the rest of the cure-all down her throat. Then she held her breath, terrified, praying. An enormous shudder ran through Lou's body.
Shit! Did our parents really just drug us?
Afraid so.
Lou picked up Elsie's vial, clearly impressed.
What is this stuff?
A cure-all I distilled. Nullifies the effects of Dwymer water instantly.
Lou stared.
Who are you, and what have you done with my sister?
I might ask you the same thing.
Elsie plopped down onto the bed next to her. They were in Lou's bedroom, still an unruly mess from her sudden departure weeks ago.
First you run away to date some shady knockoff apothecary, now you're hanging out with reformists.
Lou bowed her head.
I suppose I owe you several lifetimes worth of explanations.
It started with elixirs. All my friends bring them to gentry parties. It didn't seem like a big deal. When my friends told me hush bars have better, more unique elixirs, I got curious. Tagged along with a group to Harlow's club, the Rat Hole.
How appealing,
Elsie deadpanned. Lou gave her shoulder a gentle push.
It was more fun than it sounds. Or maybe I was just desperate. I don't know. But I felt free there. And that's when I met Harlow. First thing he told me was that I looked like a woman who knew exactly what I wanted. I'd never met anybody who noticed before.
What do you want?
Lou's expression hardened.
I want to make Locke a city where you can be whoever you want, no matter your station.
And you thought Harlow could help you?
Lou groaned and flopped backward onto the mattress.
I never said I was a genius, but he told me how he built himself up from nothing, made a name in a city where everything's about family, even though he has none.
So you really did like him?
I liked who I believed him to be. There's a difference. Anyway, we'd been going steady for a couple of months.
And you didn't tell me?
I wanted to. Harlow was so private. He said my parents would come between us if they ever found out, and it was too risky to ask you to lie on our behalf.
Elsie huffed. If I didn't already hate him, I would now. Lou flashed a tight smile.
A few weeks ago, we were in his private box at the club, and all of a sudden he panicked, demanded I leave because he had business. Normally, he loved talking to me about any dealings he had, so when he shut me out like that, I felt angry, suspicious. I used an elixir to spy on him. And there was Papa, talking business. Didn't take me long to realize why Harlow picked up with me in the first place, or why he'd been so adamant about hiding our relationship. I was leverage, in case our parents double-crossed him.
Oh, Lou.
But then I met Adrian. He told me about the reformists' plan, and I realized I was in the perfect position to be truly useful. So I ran away from home and begged Harlow to take me in. Once I was there, I found the evidence the reformists needed, proof of his connection to our parents.
Elsie thought about Harlow's terrifying fury at the dam when he'd first mistaken her for Lou. She touched her sister's arm.
You're so brave. Going up against a man like that alone.
Unfortunately, what I stole from Harlow wasn't enough. He saved correspondence and records of the payments our parents gave him, but we need Papa's ledgers too. Otherwise, it's all one-sided. Papa will just claim Harlow faked everything.
Papa keeps all his paperwork in the office,
but there's no way he'll let either of us anywhere near his office, even if he believes that memory elixir worked.
Elsie worried her lower lip.
Well then, it's a good thing you've got me to help.
Vera sagged against the bars of her jail cell. Let me get this straight. The Thornleys pushed for such a harsh sentence because you refused to work for them? With his head bowed, shadows concealed her father's face. Elixirs have always been Locke's most profitable business. The Thornleys wanted in. They knew their best bet was to team up with an established apothecary. They offered a deal. Work for them, and they'd free me with a slap on the wrist and a fine. I didn't know exactly what they had planned, but I wasn't about to throw my lot in with the people who outlawed our livelihood. I refused. Vera let her forehead thunk against the bars. They couldn't let you go blabbing to all of Locke about said deal. Henrik shook his head. Thus, the treason sentence. Pretty brilliant, really. I couldn't warn anyone. And they were free to find a much shadier partner. Vera couldn't tell which hurt worse, knowing what had been done to her father, or why. All for money. Every time she shut her eyes, she saw Harlow in the jaded rose. I'm so sorry, Dad. Henrik frowned. Whatever for? I lost the bar. Everything you worked for. Everything our family built. Vera. Henrik waited until she looked up. That bar isn't our legacy. You are our legacy. As are all your cousins. Even Art. Has he grown out of his mischief? Not even a little bit. You should see him and Benji now. They're worse than me and Rolf at that age. You two grew into it. Give them time. Henrik's expression shifted into something more serious. I should have done a lot of things differently. I was so secretive. And I raised you to be the same way. If apothecaries like us had taught more people, if more people in Locke actually understood elixirs, then it wouldn't have been so easy for the Thornleys to sow their lies. Vera clenched her fists. It's not your fault what those people did. Maybe not, but it is my fault you believed I care more about a business than my own daughter. Did she believe that? Maybe a little bit, deep down. But hearing him say it, Vera realized how ridiculous it was. Dad, of course I know you care about me. I kept the bar going because I know how much it meant to you. If you couldn't be with us, I at least wanted to become the apothecary you trained me to be. Oh, doll. It had been so long since she'd heard him call her that. I'm proud of you, apothecary or no. Who wouldn't be proud to have a kid in prison? He smiled. Like father, like daughter, eh? For a long, quiet moment, they just watched each other. At least I have this. If Vera died down here in the dark, she would do it with her father at her side. The father she'd grown up admiring, lionizing, wanting to become. What would it be like to grow up with a different type of father? For the first time since her arrest, Vera let herself think about Elsie. Maybe Elsie already knew who the Thornleys really were. Maybe she didn't care. But then she recalled Elsie's genuine relief, not to mention fury, when they'd finally found Lou. Her giddy joy trying the flight elixir at JJ's. Those wide, innocent blue eyes. Could that all be an act? It must have been, right? Why was she still obsessing over that woman? It didn't matter. She was going to rot down here. She could rage at Elsie or Rolf or Harlow or anyone she wanted. At the end of the day, Vera was never going to see any of them again.
Summer is almost here, so that means tons of outdoor activities and trying to keep up with all the fun things that are going on. Factor can help you stay on top of your wellness goals and stay fit, healthy, and full for the summer. They have fresh, never frozen meals that are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes, no matter how busy you are, so you can get back to what you like doing. With 35 different meals and more than 60 different add-ons, you are sure to never get bored. You can treat yourself to restaurant-quality meals that have ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, and blackened salmon, and keep kitchen time to a minimum, so essentially, no cleaning up. It's great. I got my brother a Factor box because he expressed some interest in wanting to get healthy over the summer and try eating more vegan food. And this made it a really effortless transition for him to try some new foods and also get food he didn't have access to. He figured out what he liked, what he didn't like, and he did it with the help of Factor. So if this sounds like something you want to try, you can head to factormeals.com/rebel50 and use code REVEL50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off the next month. That's code REVEL50 at factormeals.com/REVEL50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Elsie's arms screamed. She looked down and regretted it. Three stories below, the grass lawn looked a lot farther away than it had a minute ago.
"Use your legs," Lou hissed from somewhere below.
Unlike Elsie, Lou appeared well-versed in the art of scaling drainpipes in the dead of night.
"I'm trying."
"There you go. Easy does it."
Her sister was balancing on a windowsill a full story below. Elsie watched, open-mouthed,
as Lou wedged one hand into a near-invisible crevice in the brick wall and swung toward the next window.
You have to actually move.
Lou beckoned Elsie toward her. Elsie took a deep breath, clung as hard as she could to the drainpipe, and let her toes slip from their holds. Her body dropped. Her fingers squeaked painfully on the pipe until she caught herself, breathless, on the sill Lou had just abandoned.
Did Harlow teach you to mountain climb, too, or what?
Lou scoffed.
Please, I learned this in finishing school. You never climbed out of your dorm room to rendezvous with the crush? I thought you younger children were meant to be the real reb-
Shh! They held their breath. Down on the lawn, a guard dressed in Thornley colors strolled past. Her heartbeat pounded in her frozen fingertips, but she didn't dare move. Finally, the guard rounded the far corner of the house. Lou grinned, and then returned to scaling the wall beyond the bathroom. Within moments, she crouched outside Papa's office. Several minutes later, after much cursing and accruing of bruises, Elsie joined her. She and Lou waited until a carriage rattled past on the distant road. Using its clattering for cover, Lou wrapped her arms in Mama's now ragged coat and elbowed a hole through the window.
Remind me never to cross you,
Elsie murmured, impressed despite herself. They both clambered into the study. Lou lit the small kerosene lamp Papa kept on the desk and rifled through the shelves below, expertly removing hidden drawer bottoms Elsie wouldn't have even noticed.
Just keep watch.
Elsie got a better idea. She tiptoed to Papa's closet, where he kept his work clothes. She dug through suits and raincoats until she found what she wanted, a crossbody saddlebag. She returned to the desk and began stuffing Lou's papers into it. Lou paused to push her bangs to the side.
Thank you for coming after me. Even though I specifically asked you not to, and it became a terrible inconvenience. As thank yous go, this isn't your most convincing.
Lou smirked.
I'm serious, Elsie. It's good to know you have my back.
Always. Even when you're too stubborn to admit you need my help.
They both grinned. Lou opened her mouth to reply, then stilled. Footsteps, creaking up the stairs. Lou pressed a fingertip to her lips, eyes huge. Elsie bent toward the lantern. She pursed her lips, about to blow it out, when...
Sir? I heard a crash.
Elsie stared at her sister.
What do we do?
She mouthed. If Gunnar woke their parents... Lou nodded at the window and held out the saddlebag. Elsie took it and threw the strap over her shoulder. Lou eased around the desk to Elsie's side.
Sir? Is everything all right? Did you leave the lantern on again? Sir?
What's all that racket?
Thundered Papa.
Did you leave your lantern lit, sir?
Of course not.
In unison, Elsie and Lou grabbed hold of Papa's desk and shoved it in front of the office door.
There's someone in your office.
The entire door rattled as Gunnar threw his body weight against it. The desk screeched in protest. Something tipped off of it. The lantern. It fell as if in slow motion and shattered in Papa's wastebasket. Flames immediately leapt forth.
Go!
Lou shouted. She braced her spine against the desk just as Gunnar rammed it again.
Who's in there?
Papa demanded, right outside now.
I'm not leaving you again.
Elsie's gaze leapt from Lou to the door, to the fire just a few feet away. Lou jutted her chin at the bag on Elsie's shoulder.
Adrian needs that. I'm right behind you.
With a pang of guilt, Elsie spun and raced for the window. It wouldn't be long before the whole household awoke. Elsie swung herself onto the sill. This time, she knew better than to look down.
If I survive this, I swear I will never even so much as climb a ladder again.
Finally, Elsie reached the drainpipe. She wrapped both hands around it and slid down. After what felt like eternity, her feet struck the frosted grass. Only now did she look back. Orange flames danced inside the study. As she stared, the window exploded in shards of glass.
Lou will be fine. She has to be.
Shouts tore Elsie's attention from the window. She saw grooms sprinting from the barn, and the front gate guard abandoning his post to hurry to the burning manor. Elsie took advantage of their distraction and sprinted toward the road. Her side ached. Her lungs screamed for oxygen. She was almost there, half a block to go, and then a hand clamped down hard on her shoulder. Another hand reached out to cover her mouth, and someone dragged her into the thicket.
Listeners, thank you so much for sticking around. I'm Nicole, and I'm here with Rhoda to talk all about episode 9. The house is quite literally on fire. Elsie may be free of her parents, but who knows who grabbed her at the end. And our beloved Vera is still in jail.
There's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on. And Lou is still with the Thornleys, worried about her. This episode is a lot about heart-to-hearts to me, especially with family. So you've got Lou and Elsie. Lou, like, really opening up about how she got into her present circumstances. And we have a story of a terrible boyfriend. And then we have healing, on the other hand, with Vera, like, finally talking to her dad and learning that this, like, importance that she put onto the jaded rose was a little bit self-imposed.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, like, why are your parents the hardest people in the world to talk to, right? Like,
I don't know.
To be, like, totally honest and transparent, like, what is the deal?
Yeah.
I appreciated it. It was emotional. It had a catharsis to it. And also, It was hard, you know what I mean? To kind
of, I know. I imagine that. I said Vera is healed, but I'm like, does anyone heal via a single conversation? It's like you more get one step towards healing from this conversation. It's not like Vera's all her emotional hangups are suddenly gone. And like a babe, she will stay imprisoned with her father. You know,
yeah. And you like hope that they don't backslide either, right? Because I myself and like other friends who are like working through like kind of whatever trauma, that seems like a dramatic word, but, you know, it can also be like a manageable one you have with your parents. And sometimes you'll have a breakthrough and then like It's never revisited, you know, or like years later, you're just like That one time we talked about this thing. And it becomes kind of like, it's just like a flag in the sand and like nothing more than that. It's like not a thing that you can like build off of necessarily. So everyone's glad it happened.
Time to. Yeah, it needs time to sink in, to be processed and everything. And then on the other hand, we've got, like, you know, Vera is sort of getting closer to the heart of her family. And, like, Elsie is sort of with her conversation, Lou, but she's also literally climbing out the window and having the house set on fire. You know, she's trying to steal something from her dad's office. But, I mean, the whole sequence. Did you ever sneak out of your house when you were a kid?
Yeah, a lot of times. I had, like, in high school, I had this system where my window was really high, like pretty high off the ground. If I had to guess, it was like maybe 8 feet high, the bottom of it, the ledge of it. So I had like fashioned, like I'd straightened out hangers, but kept the hooks on. And then I would have to lower a bar stool out of my window with the hangers and then like climb out of the window and then land gently onto the bar stool, you know, to be able to climb back down. And then I had to do
inventor.
It. And then I had to do it again with the exterior wall. Do you know? I'd have to do that twice to get out of the property and then back in. And so heaving yourself up was like pretty rough because you were heaving yourself up into like a windowsill that had like a metal kind of lining onto it. And then you'd have to be able to heave yourself up and then like get yourself over and then land on the bed. It was a pretty like Cirque du Soleil operation at the time for me. And I remember one of my first jobs, I worked at the mall and I was running late and my mom walked us out of the house. And I was just like, I think it was like my first day on the job, so I couldn't be late. And I was so paranoid. So I had to break into the house and had to show her, like, basically that I knew how to get in and out of the house.
Yeah.
And then my cover was blown. God. But it was worth it to work on time, I think.
It's like an Ocean's 11 operation. Like, you had multiple steps. I never snuck out of my house. The most I did was the runaway thing that every child does. And I think I saw this in a cartoon that, like, you put a handkerchief at the end of a stick. So I did that once, and I just went and I sat on the side of the house. I didn't run away. I just,
like,
pretended.
Did you wait until they found you, or did you, like, get hungry and
back.
Then you're like...
I'm also pretty sure that they were like, she's just sitting on the outside of the house, like, not doing anything. I did have, your mechanism reminds me, I had blueprints for, like, a majestic tree house that I used to dream about. And my Nana was obviously my grandmother, and I wanted her to be able to get in the tree house. So I had this complex design for a bucket elevator where I'd put her in the bucket and hoist her up. This was my idea. It never happened. But a human size, like, she's very small. So I was like, it'll totally work. So I'm thinking about the mechanism of the hanger being the only thing holding the stool. And I'm like, it seems slippery.
Well, there was two. It was like, you know, and then they would hook on to the legs and then be lowered. But I mean, the thing is, when I reflect on it, so I live in my childhood home now, right? I, like, own my house.
Mm-hmm.
It's my family house. And now I'm just like, you know, I could have just snuck out the front door. Like, it would have been fine if I just, like, wore no shoes, walked down the hallway past their room, and then opened the door. Like, why did I think that was, there's no world where that's easier, you know, to lower myself. And, like, it was also, like, pretty dangerous when you think
it
of a bar stool,
dangerous.
You know, it's like the size of a plate. And that's what I was, like, landing on to lower myself on. I mean... Yeah.
Where were you going? It's the
to
most
go
important.
See my boyfriend, to do nothing, to go sit in a car and, like, hang out, you know? Like, it wasn't even, I bet that this was, like, 10 o'clock at night, you know? And it would be, like, 10 to 10:45 to hang out. And then I'd, like, go back to bed, you know? Like, as all of my, like, rebellious stories, it was, like, a lie to do nothing interesting, you know?
Like, come back. It just sounds like you wanted autonomy and so, like, you didn't want to misbehave. You're just like, I want to go do this for a bit and then I will be happy to go to sleep.
I do wonder if I had even just, like, an hour later in my curfew, if that would even be necessary to sneak out of the house.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Did you have a curfew?
I never had a curfew. I was very much a goody two shoes. The most I did is for prom, senior year of prom. I stole liquor from the pantry, and then my parents found it. And then I was so guilt-ridden that I couldn't stop crying when they were trying to apply my makeup. So they would, like, put it on, and I would just keep weeping. I just, this is probably why I never snuck out, the guilt. It's not even that I don't even remember if I wanted to, but I was probably quite happy reading my book. I liked my bedroom a lot as a kid. I felt like it was an oasis, you know? I, like a lot of people do. I just really enjoyed spending time in there. And I was, like, a lot of imaginative play and a lot of reading. So, yeah, I never had evil parents colluding with a Harlow figure to take over the city, unlike Elsie. But thank you so much for talking with me about episode 9, Rhoda, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in. You can find more shows like Revel on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Revel is produced by Nicole Kreuter and Kaylin West. Associate produced by Devin Shepherd. Executive produced by Molly Barton and Julian Yap. Audio editing by Kaylin West and Sam Bagala. Theme music by Hashem Asadolahi. Featuring performances by Hashem Asadolahi, Josiah Lamb, Alan Ferber, and Mike Forzano. Theme music mixed by Justin Morell. This season of Revel is hosted by Rhoda Baeza and Nicole Otto. You're listening to Revel, Elixir, created and produced by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Elixir is written by Ellen Goodlett and performed by Keeler Lee, Marin Miller, and Ava Mag. Produced by Nicole Otto. Executive produced by Molly Barton. Audio editing, sound design, and theme music by Amanda Rose Smith.